Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
I'm excited. It's a Sunday night game. So, Seth, you and I actually get to watch a little football in the early window, and there's some really good games in the early window on Sunday in the NFL. Like some really good games.
So before the pregame starts.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Okay, 4:20 p.m.
What do we got?
4:20 p.m. So the early games will probably be wrapping up at like 3:15 at the latest, and that'll give us a full hour to get over to the stage just south of NRG Stadium. So let's stack this thing here. I'll start with the undercard games. We get an early game. This game might stink, but it's 8:30 in the morning football, and normally you and I are doing the pregame during these Europe games, these England games. So we're able to watch it like out of one eye, but out of the other eye, we've got to, you know, kind of be doing the pregame show. I can actually sit and eat breakfast, as can you, and sit and watch Daniel Jones versus Bryce Young live from Munich, Germany. How about that?
Yeah,
man.
Bryce Young for his third straight start.
How about that? Yeah.
Against the will of the Panthers themselves.
It took a
car
accident.
Andy Dalton had to go and get injured. Yeah. It took what?
It took a car accident to get.
That's weird. You know what? That's one of the weird occurrences of this year that kind of just skated over my brain because I wasn't thinking about the Panthers all that much.
Yeah, Andy Dalton and his family were in a car accident, and that's why, for those who don't know, that's why he got knocked out as the starter for the Panthers. And since then, I always thought the rule was you can't lose your starting job to a car accident. I always thought that was the old saying around the NFL. But apparently, Dave Canales doesn't live that way in Carolina. Bryce Young got
sometimes
his job.
Sometimes when you have a number one overall pick that you were hired specifically to fix, and you've got an owner that's just going to tell you what to do and then change his instructions the next week. Yeah.
I am actually...
Picked a great job there, Dave Canales.
I am actually interested in this game, one, because I know they gave Brian Daboll and the owner of John Mara gave Daboll and Joe Shane a vote of confidence. But I still think, like, you lose to Carolina, you're in New York, man. Like, there's going to be a lot of people. The natives will be at the gates there with the pitchforks and everything. I've not gotten to sit down and watch a full Bryce Young game because you and I are working on game days. I actually, believe it or not, am looking forward to sitting down and seeing what exactly this looks like with Bryce Young at quarterback.
The last game before he was benched, I think, was that game where he just he took a shot that no quarterback should have ever chosen to take for any reason whatsoever. As a guy that weighs all of a buck 35, it just showed zero vision whatsoever, or understanding, or awareness. Just looked completely lost and almost got himself killed, like literally killed. I fear for that young man. He seems like a pleasant young non-quarterback.
Yeah,
it feels like he's a fan who won a contest to go out and play quarterback in the NFL, and like three three plays into the game, the promoters are thinking, "Oh my God, we've made a horrible mistake."
Yeah.
God. Oh, this is not going to end well for Kellogg's company.
Did he sign a release form? No. Bills at Colts is an early. There's a lot of early games. Bills at Colts is one of the early games. Okay.
Yeah.
Who are you rooting for in Bills and Colts? And here's why I ask. The Bills are at the Indianapolis Colts. Obviously, if the Colts win, then there's a chance they're a game closer to the Texans come Monday morning. Yeah. However, if the Colts win, you know, the Texans are still chasing the Bills for the 2 seed in the AFC right now and have the head-to-head win over them.
Oh, damn
right?
it, Sean.
Right? So there's a little bit of conflict here. Who are you rooting for?
You know what? No matter what happens in this game, it's got the potential to create more discord and disharmony in the Colts organization.
Yeah.
So if the Colts win because Flacco plays great, then I don't think Flacco's going to play great all season long. So it'll be a Pyrrhic victory.
Mm-hmm.
If the Colts lose and Joe Flacco plays atrociously, then the Colts might be forced to put Anthony Richardson back in before they really want him to go in. And that creates an even bigger mess. So.
All right.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and I'll pull for the Colts. Pull for the Colts.
Okay.
I think nothing good can come from this game for the Colts. So I'll pull for the Colts to help us out versus the Bills. And then, ironically, they'll be helping us out. And in a lost season, the Texans could end up with the 2 seed partly through help of the Colts.
The
Texans ended up with C.J. Stroud by way of help from the Colts.
That's true. That's a good point.
Yeah.
They have a history, a long history of helping out the Texans. The mid-card here, I would say, a couple of early games involving some big-name teams. Denver at Kansas City. I can't believe I'm saying this, but Denver would be a playoff team if the season ended today, and they're traveling to Kansas City. And I know you and I have not been big Bo Nix fans, but he's not been great, but he was Offensive Rookie of the Month last month. Like, he's been solid, and their defense is really, really good. Like, this might be a bit of a tricky game for Kansas City. Who knows?
His numbers, he hasn't done it the same way Jaden Daniels has done, but Bo Nix's numbers are comparable to Jaden Daniels in some respects.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, these are two teams whose struggling quarterbacks have been propped up by a really good defense. So whether this young Pat Mahomes fella or this
true.
Bo Nix character, can take advantage of having really good defenses on the other side, then so be it. There you go.
It's weird. It's a division game, and yet I feel like, man, Kansas City might be looking ahead because they're going to Buffalo next week. You know, like that's.
So I despise the Colts or the Chiefs in general, and I despise Sean Payton.
Yeah.
I can't in good conscience root for the Chiefs. So
I'm a
Broncos guy.
The Texans are still mathematically, have a chance at doing some things in the AFC. You need Kansas City to start losing some games. The other mid-card game, as I stack this wrestling card style, Christian McCaffrey's return for San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
San Francisco 4-4, Tampa Bay 4-5, and yet I feel like these are two of the more dangerous offenses in the NFC when they're fully stacked. The problem for Tampa Bay is they're still missing guys. They're still missing Mike Evans, and they're going to be missing Chris Godwin until next season.
They're still missing. The one thing that's going to be interesting in this one is that the Bucs will get dial-up super aggressive defensive back blitzes. They blitz their defensive backs a lot, and that's something that Brock Purdy has struggled against this year. Now, that's just the type of blitz that somebody like Christian McCaffrey can help out a lot in as an outlet, as a pass blocker, all of that. It makes it a lot tougher to be an aggressive blitzing team versus a 49ers team that has Christian McCaffrey on it. I don't know how much Christian McCaffrey is going to play.
Yeah.
I mean, Achilles tendonitis is no joke for a running back especially. And he's coming back a long bout of trying to get his Achilles tendons feeling good again. And I'm skeptical that they use him heavily.
Yep.
I'm a Bucs fan this year. If I have to choose an NFC team to root for, man, the Bucs at 4-5, I feel are one of the scarier 4-5 teams out there, and they've done it against a lot of different expectations, or not just for the team, but for Baker Mayfield himself.
Yeah, I mean, they're 4-5. Atlanta's 6-3. Like, Tampa Bay's got to get to winning here. You know, like they've got work to do. So they're a touchdown underdog at home. I know they're undermanned right now, but I thought they showed some things against Kansas City. I might take the points there. All right, semi-main event: Philadelphia at Dallas. Our first game post Dak Prescott. This will be a game for Texan fans to keep an eye on. just to see how the Cowboys look with Cooper Rush at quarterback here against a red-hot Philadelphia team right now. Philadelphia, it's hard to believe. Like, remember, like 3 weeks ago, Nick Sirianni's getting killed for bringing his kids to a press conference and just sitting there going, we'll get it fixed, guys, don't you worry. And then it turns out they fixed a lot of stuff. The Eagles, like, they're a pretty good football team right
now. They figured it out. They're getting the most out of the players you'd expect to get it out of. They are facing Cooper Rush, who's actually 5-1.
Is he 5-1
as a starter, Sean? Okay. So they've played good football with Cooper Rush. I think that was a different Cowboys team though when Cooper Rush got those 5 wins. They're a different team now. His one loss was versus the Eagles, where he threw 3 interceptions. Mm-hmm. So the different coordinator now, different players, and yet Fangio throws at a lot of things at quarterbacks that are hard for younger or inexperienced quarterbacks to figure out. And I think, Philadelphia runs away with this
text one. Text message, 5-hour energy fan line. I thought Trey Lance was the backup in Dallas, but Cooper Rush is QB2. Why? Because Trey Lance sucks. That's why. Yeah. Cooper Rush is better than Trey Lance right now. That's why.
Was Trey Lance on the depth chart as the second string guy?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I think this guy's just
Trey Lance was a complete and total experiment. Nobody took it seriously when the Cowboys traded. Nobody looked at it and thought like, oh, yep, here's where Trey
He's
Lance
the guy.
Really
traded a 4th-round pick for him.
Remember the Kyle Shanahan rule. Yeah. Never, ever, ever, you idiot billionaire owners, think that somehow your stupid coach is going to get more out of a quarterback than Kyle Shanahan.
Well, Sam Darnold is testing that theory right now, right?
Yeah.
I'm with you. I agree with that theory. I mean, Sam Darnold's a backup.
He didn't get the full experiment in San Francisco. It wasn't like, if anything, I'll credit Kyle Shanahan with fixing Sam Darnold more so than
maybe so.
Say that they're doing more with him.
Yep. Yeah. The main event for the weekend, oddly enough, is a noon start, in my mind, between the Steelers and the Washington Commanders. I am excited about this game between Pittsburgh and Washington. Jaden Daniels going against a Steeler defense. Jaden Daniels going against TJ Watt and that Steeler defense. All that talent they've got on that defensive side in that secondary. This is going to start to be reckoning time for Jaden Daniels. Jaden Daniels, I don't think, has played a single division game yet. Mm-hmm. For the Commanders. And I know that division's not great, but division games have a different feel than just normal regular season games. And now you're starting to hit the back end of the season, too. I'm anxious to see how Jaden Daniels holds up physically. He's a skinny, skinny dude. And that Steelers defense likes to bring the lumber, man.
They've got an appetite for violence.
Yes,
they do.
Yes.
I think that the biggest thing about the Commanders, it's not just Jaden Daniels' performance. It's that all of a sudden they just look like an actual professional football team, mm-hmm. And credit Dan Quinn. Now, Dan Quinn has had offensive, minded gurus before for him, and made it to the Super Bowl, had a healthy, almost insurmountable Super Bowl lead, et cetera, et cetera. But the one indicator that just looks like, oh, this is a different Washington team, not just the quarterback. Mm-hmm. They haven't turned the ball over in 4 games. That's the longest stretch that Washington has had. And since
a long time.
Oh wait, no, they've gone 4 straight games without a turnover. That's the franchise's longest streak since turnovers were first tracked in 1933.
Yeah, that's hard to do even for good teams to not
right,
turn the
right,
ball
right.
Over
and
for,
yeah, like and that, you know, the Washington had a multiple Super Bowl championship run in that period, obviously. Yep. So like this is a clean, functioning, really good defense, just well structured and competent football team so
far.
It's not just Jaden Daniels' phenom performance.
Are you ready to reevaluate Cliff Kingsbury as an OC I know your take had been earlier that teams catch up to him at some time.
Right, right. Yeah, teams catch up to him. So the second half of the season is big. I think Cardinals fans are probably watching this and saying, look, we've been through, Cliff Kingsbury is an unstoppable force in the first half of the season. Then people start to figure out exactly how they're operating and they become kind of predictable. So we'll see over the course of the second half of the season.
Yeah.
I think the one thing that's different now is that Kingsbury had a year to reflect on just, you know, and kind of maybe self-evaluate, get input from others. And this is the first time in the NFL where he's been an offensive coordinator without the duties of a head coach. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you might be getting the very best version of Cliff Kingsbury, the NFL offensive coordinator.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, and he's done an awesome job with Jaden Daniels so far. So that's kind of how I view the line. I never put the Texans in this card that we stack here because we know we're going to be watching that game. I would imagine outside of Houston that the Texans and the Lions are pretty high up the board for a lot of people this weekend. Just another chance to see C.J. Stroud on national TV and see if the Texans have recovered from all the stuff that we saw on Thursday night last week against the Jets.
This is the point where a lot of the national analysts who gushed about the Texans all offseason long, it's a moment of reckoning for them. And I can feel it over the last couple weeks of like, oh boy, do I flip? Do I flip? Do I start saying, wait a minute? Okay, we got to start crushing these Texans.
Yeah.
We got to start crushing D'Amico Ryans and C.J. Stroud and everybody else that we gushed about all offseason long.
Which happens. Like, usually the effect when you are backing a team and they prove, you know, it turns out they're making you look, you know, they're making you look wrong. The reaction
all up in your mentions with receipts.
You get angry get angry at that team, right? Like you put me through this. Yeah. CJ and D'Amico and Strouser and everybody
else. You turned me into a fool, damn you.
Makes people mad, man. Makes people mad. Text message, 5 Hour Energy fan line. Bucks for sure on my favorite teams to root for list. I'm with you on that. That was a good take, Seth. Rooting for, and I can't believe I'm saying that because I used to hate Baker Mayfield. I like the Bucks version of Baker Mayfield. I think he's been served some humble pie the last couple years.
I've always known that Baker Mayfield would be a guy that I was going to have conflicting emotions about.
Yeah.
I think there's a certain element of like, oh, just shut up, man. What the hell? But then there's another side of him like, and yet I admire your moxie.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like, and it's all completely based on whether he plays for a team that you like or if he's your quarterback. It's going to continue to be that way. I like Baker Mayfield right now. I might despise him by the end of the season.
You might, but here's the other thing. Like, he's, as far as the Texans go, he's harmless. They don't play him.
Right, right.
He's over in the NFC. Like, if he were playing for Cincinnati or something like that, you know.
I hope it's a nice redemption story. Same as Geno Smith.
Yeah.
You know? I got no reason
to. Seattle.
Geno Smith, polarizing guy in a lot of ways. Yep. But like, oh yeah, way off in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
In the NFC. Yeah. Good for you, Geno Smith. Good for you.
Who's he bothering? He's not bothering me. Yeah. Go do you, Geno Smith and Baker Mayfield, for sure. All right, Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you. It is a Football Friday. We'll get to the Texans game. We'll get final thoughts on the Texans as the guys from In the Loop come in here with us in about 30 minutes or so. Chris Strouser met with the media yesterday. We played some of this earlier. There is one of the cuts that we played that got people very worked up, and it has to do with the Texans handling some of the things that other teams are doing to them right now. We will play that. We'll rehash that. We'll do that coming up next.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This show is brought to you by 5-Hour Energy. Being a fan is a hands-on job, which is why we're freeing up your hands for cheering, jeering, and everything in between. With 5-Hour Energy Fan E-Pack, you'll be fully equipped to hit the tailgate with all the energy you and your fellow diehards need for rooting on the home team. No matter what, just take a shot past the rest to your entire squad and keep the good times rolling. Now available on 5hourenergy.com with the purchase of Stan the Fan 5-Hour Energy. Shipped nationwide.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
A few people pointing out, Seth, appropriately, before you and I fall too much in love with Baker Mayfield.
What did I do?
He was wearing a Rangers World Series hat last year.
He took a shot at the Astros.
Yeah, yeah. He dropped a little drive-by comments, yeah.
I told you, it's complicated, man.
It is complicated,
Baker and I, our relationship, it's like a series on HBO, Sean.
Mm-hmm.
There are going to be times where, yes, did I secretly plot to have him assassinated? Sure, mm-hmm. sure. But then we resolved our differences, and now he's an ally.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
But I will not turn my back on him.
No.
No. I'll never fully trust him.
No. Yeah. Every relationship has peaks and valleys, you know? And
right.
That was a valley, you know? So it is what it is. Here's Chris Strausser, the Texans offensive line coach, met with the media yesterday. If you're looking for a gauge on how big an issue the Texans offensive line is, just know that the Texans had their position coach for that group meet with the media. I thought it was a good idea. I thought it was a really good idea.
It was a good idea, and I also thought, I was surprised, because I thought, when I first heard that Strausser was speaking, I figured this was the one day that all the coaches speak and all the assistant coaches speak, and it was not.
No, I was going to say, if they did, then none of the audio made it out of NRG Stadium yesterday.
Yeah.
Just Strausser. So here was Strausser. A lot of issues on the offensive line. One of them is handling stunts. This offensive line looks overwhelmed when they get stunts thrown at him. So here is Strausser on that topic.
Stunts are always a challenge. I mean, there's a reason that defenses do stunt on third down, because there's some challenges with it. So to me, it all goes back to starting with just like being really good at one-on-one pass protection, because you get that done. And then the next step, the next phase, is to be able to handle a stunt. And a lot of what goes into handling a stunt is the same stuff that goes into being a really good one-on-one protector. So, you know, there's a lot of little things that we know that as we've really studied, we had that extra 3 days to really kind of go back and look at some stuff and really see some stuff that consistently has shown up as issues and stuff. Again, like I said, that I need to go back and do a better job as a coach to get these guys locked into better and find a way to drill it better and make sure when we show up on Sunday that everybody's got complete confidence in what we're doing.
People were angry at this explanation.
Oh, they were?
A little
okay.
bit.
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess because it is. You never want to hear that, like, oh, it's just the bit. At the end of the day, that answer was they need to be better pass blockers.
Yeah.
Like, it just, yeah. If only they could handle the stunts, if only they could also handle the non-stunts. That's the problem, right? Well, see, the issue, I'm glad they got mad at that, so I could really boil that down to the basics. Hey, they're bad at stunts. Why are they bad at stunts? Because they can't do the normal stuff right
either.
They're
bad at everything. Yeah.
So whether the team is stunting or just rushing one-on-one straight up, they're not doing it all right. Yeah, that is a frustrating answer.
Yeah, I think the part of the answer was, and this is where, you know, this is where Strausser's getting penalized for going into any modicum of detail on this thing, but I think that my sense is the part where he's talking about, like, the fact that they had a long week this week actually really helped in them diagnosing some of the things they've been doing on stunts. And the reaction that I've seen from us playing that from people has been along the lines of, isn't this stuff that gets worked out in training camp?
It's week 10.
Yeah, it's week 10. What are we doing basic stuff that feels like shaking off the rust or working out the kinks stuff? You know what I mean?
Yeah, and there's a lot about the offensive line right now, too. I came across this NFL Films piece that they just talked. It's about pulling offensive linemen, and it's a highlight reel basically of various offensive linemen when they're pulling, just burying people and destroying them. Now, obviously, and these are highlights pulled from like the last 20 years of football.
Yeah.
They got Larry Allen on
Jim
here.
Harbaugh is doing a vignette on there, and he looks like he's 30 years old.
Yeah. So it's not like this is what it looked like every single time these guys pulled, and yet I'm struggling in my mind to remember a time when an actual offensive lineman this year was pulling and really just buried somebody. And I'm sure it's happened, and I can't remember it right now, but you don't expect it.
No.
I think maybe one of the most impressive pulling lineman plays was Cade Stover dumping that linebacker or safety a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
That was really impressive by Cade Stover.
Yeah.
He's a tight end.
Yeah.
So there's no part of the game right now where you feel like they're a physically punishing bunch. And that's frustrating. So that's not even on the pass protection side of things. But you know what it is on? It's on, all right, how well are you selling the play action?
Mm-hmm.
When some of the things the Texans will try to do now for play action is, oh, okay, they pull a guard because they do that a lot in the run game. Right, but Nobody's respecting it. They can read it immediately. The whole operation just does nothing to put any kind of fear or uncertainty in the mind of the defense. And that's when teams can start teeing off on you because they just simply don't respect the offensive line.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, the other reactions we've been getting really throughout the last couple weeks, but today in particular because we're so honed in on this Lions game. And in the final segment, we'll give you some of our keys and our predictions for this game on Sunday. But there's a lot of fans going, man, it's really hard for me to watch games involving some of these other teams because I'm watching teams like just do very basic things that are allowing their quarterback to have time in the pocket. Like, yeah. That's all we're asking for. Give our quarterback 3 seconds to survey the field and find an open receiver. They're not even doing – like, you watched that game last night between the Bengals and the Ravens, and there's so much good stuff going on offensively in that game that the offensive line for the Texans just don't even – they're not even allowed to play in that store right now. You know what I mean? Like,
And that's what frustrates me, and this comes back to Bobby Slowick, is – screens, simplest thing in the world. Everybody knows it that, hey, if you're having trouble with the blitz or the pass rush, run some screens. Should be simple, right? Should be, but the Texans are awful at running screens.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot baked into that. Some is just on the inability of the offensive lineman to get out there and move in space and block. I mean, how many times this year have we seen Shaq Mason on screens get nowhere close to a guy to block?
Yeah.
Like, Shaq Mason is just lumbering around out there in space. He might as well be playing Sudoku, and he physically can't get there. Or the running back runs into Shaq Mason because he can't get
that's
out
happened.
Of his way fast enough.
Yeah, that's
and
happened.
And it's not just Shaq Mason. It's just he's had some of the more glaring examples. But it's in like their tendencies and the ability of defenses to anticipate screen, they don't do any of it well. So even that little outlet to help take some heat off the quarterback, they can't do. And you look at the best teams, I'm just looking at the chart that Texans Cap sent me with screen success rate. Oh, lo and behold, you know, Baltimore, Buffalo, Detroit, Kansas City, they're all up in that upper quadrant. Miami, and it makes sense because McDaniel's really good at engineering the short stuff, really good at it. And he's got some really good wide receivers that can do stuff with it. And then Tampa, another team that's surpassed expectations despite wide receiver issues, they're one of the best screen operating teams in the NFL.
Yep.
The Texans just don't operate on the same level as even the 4-5 Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Not offensively right now, for sure. Here was Strouser again, talking about the O-line group being a prideful group. Just know that the he that he's talking about at the beginning of this is C.J. Stroud.
We believe we got the best guy in the NFL, and our guys love playing for that guy. And just the tremendous plays that this guy makes, really for us, is hugely important. And so, nobody's happy with the fact that we're struggling in pass protection right now. I mean, everybody wants to do better, starting with myself, but, you know, everybody across the board wants to do better. And so, just like you said, it is a prideful group, and those guys care tremendously about taking care of our quarterback.
It's a prideful group. They care about taking care of their quarterback. We've talked a lot about Kenyon Green and how much of an issue that's been and how much that's, you know, probably limiting everybody else. I think if you look at the entire group, though, and you talk about what we're saying with the screens, I think there's a huge and a central tenet of this offense is that you want to make it really difficult by the defense by virtue of all of your plays looking the same. Mm-hmm. That when you're run blocking, it looks like when you're pass blocking, or when you're pass blocking, it looks the same as when you're run blocking. You go back to that Joe Mixon Wildcat play, and they say they were trying to sell the run. I'm watching the offensive line, and I'm like, I don't know what linebacker in America is going to bite on run on that play.
Right.
There's nothing about the offensive line that looked like it was run. The guard pulled. Yep. Because it looked like one of these janky-ass play-action plays that they run where you can tell immediately that it's pass. And that's the entire operation. So that's where... I think Strouser said the things that he should be expected to say without selling his own players under the bus yesterday. But that's where it comes back on Strouser and Slowick, is that the entire operation is not functioning as a group the way the San Francisco 49ers, when they're operating this offense, look. They are not that same cohesive bunch that puts defenses in a bind.
Yeah, or even average teams. You know, like it's that. Yeah, I mean, they're so far off of that right now. Text message, 5-Hour Energy fan line. Man, I was watching pass pro last night for the Bengals. I almost started crying. One play, the left guard chipped protection with the center, then switched his hips and made a complete block on the stunting tackle. It was just demoralizing.
Just, is there anything more infuriating than a Texans offensive lineman realizing that somebody made a mental error or he himself screwed up and they just
stand
totally upright and become spectators?
Yeah.
Just like, oh, I wonder what will transpire. Oh, well, this is an interesting turn of events.
Yeah, man.
I don't know if they're even giving a lookout yell to CJ. You know? Do you even care to just, you know, to throw out an alarm, dial 911, something?
Something. All right, final segment coming up. Let's get you guys ready for this game. Keys to the game. Keys to a Texans victory. They are only 3.5-point underdogs, by the way. So we'll get into that. And Seth will give his prediction. I'll give my prediction as well. We will give you our final thoughts on that. We'll talk to the guys on In the Loop. That is next.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, we'll get into the keys here for the Texans. Let's preface all this. Texans and Lions, Sunday night, NRG Stadium. Lions are a small favorite, 3.5 points. But this is, and we'll see today. I think we get confirmation today, Seth, that there will be no Nico Collins and no Will Anderson Jr.
Well, there have been a couple players this year who didn't practice on Wednesday or Thursday, but did play in the game. Dalton Schultz was one of them. I can't think of who the other one was. So it's not without precedent that a D'Amico Ryans player didn't practice on Thursday and then played in the game. So Will, and because Will has worked through these ankle issues a few times now, I'm wondering if maybe they're with him, they're like, all right, we're just gonna really let this thing calm down as much as possible, then you can go out and play on Sunday.
That's fair.
Nico's the one that I'd be very surprised if he plays this
weekend. Well, Nico's still on injured reserve too.
Right.
You know,
right,
he needs to have his window to practice at. Now, it's not like activating somebody's practice window and allowing them to practice is the same as building a house or something like that. Like, it's administrative. Yeah. I would imagine you just hit a button and he's activated and he's at practice and then away you go. But to your point,
there probably is a fax involved somewhere because the NFL, just like doctor's offices, won't let go of the fax machine.
Yes, somebody is working the fax machine.
I pay freaking e-fax money so I can fax a document twice a year. Thanks a lot, Doc.
You have brought this point up a couple times this week, though, which is if Nico is capable of practicing, given the position that he plays and how much timing is involved and things like that, then it would have been nice to bring him back on Wednesday to get a couple practices in.
I think Detroit has been preparing like Nico Collins is going to play, and it's not like the Texans operate that much differently without Nico Collins, other than the, you know, completing long passes,
scoring
part of it.
Points,
right. But I don't think they changed the system up so much that like, oh, how are we going to? I think they're very much thinking about the possibility of Nico Collins.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think I think D'Amico wouldn't have played an extreme level of gamesmanship here and thought like, well, no, we're not going to let anybody know until Sunday morning. It seems unlikely to me.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. We'll know in a couple of hours what the deal is out at Texans practice. As far as keys to this game, you tell me your confidence level that the Texans can accomplish these things against the Lions. Winning the turnover battle, heating up Jared Goff, forcing mistakes from the Lions quarterback.
I think they've got a very good shot at creating some turnovers. Mm-hmm. I think that, and we've seen that from the Texans defense over the last few weeks. They've started to look more like that opportunistic bunch.
True.
It's a lot harder if Will Anderson doesn't play. But D'Amico has turned into a guy that blitzes on third down a lot. This Lions team is a team that can, they can create some big opportunities when they get blitzed. So there's a risk-reward scenario there. But D'Amico, especially if Will Anderson isn't there, I think he feels like we're going to have to blitz this team.
Mm-hmm.
And it helps a lot having Jimmy Ward on the back end, I think, now, and just kind of knowing where the weak spots are in the blitz. I think it helps a lot having Azeez Alshire out there and understanding pre-snap clues and tells and everything this is going to be an aggressive defense versus a really good offense, and it could swing wildly based on turnovers.
Yeah, we've been so focused on the guys that may not play. They are getting some important pieces back for this game on Sunday. Jimmy Ward, Azeez Alshire. We'll talk about Jared Patterson in just a second. D Defensively, yeah. though, the other big thing is tackling. They've got to tackle better than they've been tackling.
They have to tackle better than they've been tackling, and that is something that I think you wonder, well, how much can you work on that in the regular season? The teams that are good at tackling work on it during the regular season. Find they stress it. They focus on it. Yeah. And I don't know if maybe D'Amico had pulled away from that a little bit as a point of emphasis, where in the preseason I thought it was glaringly obvious that they'd made progress tackling. And in the first couple games of the season, I thought it looked obvious that they had made progress tackling. And then now all of that has evaporated.
It's regressed,
Houston's allowing, they're allowing 3.45 yards after contact, which is 30th in the NFL.
Yikes.
They've given up 35 runs of 10-plus yards. That's 28th in the NFL. Alshire helps some individually in that. But I think Alshire is a guy during the week of practice that can really help drill it home with guys about taking the right angles, approaching right, the practicing tackling, even though it's non-contact or non-pads. Hopefully Alshire makes a big difference in that regard. The one other thing that I don't think necessarily matches up with any of your keys here is that Detroit is really good at play action.
Yeah.
Azeez Alshire, and again, you know, diagnosing and reading whether it's play action or pass, all of that matters a lot this week versus the Lions. So I hope he makes a big difference.
Yeah, they got the brains of the defense back. You know, Jimmy, with Jimmy Ward back there in the secondary, and with Azeez Alshire at with the green dot, it's like they're as a unit, as an 11 person. We treat it as one, like they're one big person. It's like their IQ just went up by 30 or something like that.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Special teams. Detroit has really good special teams. You know how I know that? Frank Ross put over the Detroit special teams like nobody has ever done it before.
Different coordinators are some of the top tier special teams coaches who play against, and some of the best returners or whatever. This week, Dave Phipp is currently, without a shred of doubt, in my opinion, the best special teams coach in the NFL. He's the most creative. He's the most disciplined. He knows how to find a roster full of players. They're aggressive. They got the best returner going in the NFL, and Khalif Raymond. He got the highest paid special teams player in the NFL, and Jalen Reeves-Maybin, a familiar face around here as well. And they play the right way, and they nullify yards. The longest return that they've given up is 11 yards. So for having the best punter in the NFL, 11 yards is a pretty darn good coverage unit. So all four phases, aggressive, the coach, man, got our hands full.
Yeah,
Can't wait to see what we can do.
That's a scary thing, just because I feel like, especially if there's no Nico Collins, that is a phase you're going to have to win. You know, you're going to have to find some yards specialty. You can't allow big returns for sure. You can't give them short fields. You need to find yourself a couple short fields probably along the way.
The other thing too about it, as far as, yes, the conventional special teams are really good for the Lions, but Campbell's willingness to go for it on fourth down from inside, deep inside his own territory. They did one, I think it was from the 30 earlier this year, on a fourth down early in the game, where they threw a pass on fourth and long out of field goal, out of punt formation. Last year they had one. They had one against Kansas City from like their 15-yard line last year, a fake punt that worked out. So you've got to be constantly on alert for everything. And I think that's another – it's a bit of a testament to how well coached they are across the board on this team. When it comes to deception, the Lions are just really good at it. They're really good at it in special teams. Offensively, I mean, you saw the clip last year. I think a lot of people listening right now probably saw the clip of Jared Goff getting tackled when he didn't have the ball, because he executes the play fake so well. He handed the ball off and got hit like 3 seconds late standing there, because he does a really good job with that part of it. So the deception and the ability to go for it in places where other teams wouldn't go for it, you've just got to be dialed in all the time against this team.
Yeah, the last thing here, I'm going to tie all the offensive stuff together here. This is a huge game for Bobby Slowik. This is a huge game for Bobby Slowik. I can't overstate that. He is under fire right now. This offensive line has looked poorly coached. C.J. Stroud is getting hit a ton. His play calling has become stale and predictable, and that's in the adjustments that they've made. I don't know what adjustments they make at halftime. I just know about the results, and this has been a bad offensive team coming out of the locker room at halftime. Just for some context here, the Thursday night game last night between the Bengals and the Ravens, those two teams scored more touchdowns in the second half of that game collectively than the Texans have scored all year in the second half combined of their nine games. The Bengals and the Ravens scored seven touchdowns in the second half of their game last night. The Texans as a team have scored six over the course of the season in the second half.
Sometimes halftime adjustments are overrated. And usually they are. You know, usually it's not a grand shift in scheme or anything. It's a matter of figuring out what's been working, what hasn't. You tweak a little thing here. It's not necessarily anything that's made for TV movie type material.
Yeah.
And yet, being so much worse in the second half, that falls on the offensive coordinator.
Either that or
you're brilliantly scheming the best way to get the most out of guys in the first half, and it falls apart, and you can only disguise it for so long in the second half. Does not feel that way.
No. And when either way, it's not good. You know, so it's you're right. Like the whole make adjustments at halftime. Like 99% of the time, that's fans just saying we don't make any adjustments. What adjustment did you want to make? I don't know, adjustments.
Yeah.
But the results, you know, which I think is the point you're making and I'm making here. The results would indicate that this is not a well-coached team in the second half of football games.
I had somebody tweet at John McClain, me, and Clint Sterner yesterday. He said, D'Amico Ryan's hiring Bobby Slowick is on you. Work with QB coach and OC. Fix it now. BS. So I can't tell if he's saying that the hiring of Bobby Slowick is on D'Amico or if somehow John, me, and Clint Sterner are responsible for it. I asked him for clarification, and he hasn't told. Are Clint, John, and I responsible for the hiring of Bobby Slowick?
You know what I like to think? I like to think he's blaming McClain, and he's copying the two of you so that you can be like, yeah, John, what the hell?
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I don't know. I have no idea.
Oh, no, you know what? He also put Houston Texans in there. Okay, the first person was he directed it to the Houston Texans, John McClain, me, and Clint Sterner.
Okay.
So I think he's saying that the Texans, it's on you that you let D'Amico bring his buddy over here instead of going out and finding a guy with experience or what have you.
Big game for Bobby Slowick, especially when the guy across the field or up in the booth, wherever Ben Johnson chooses to ply his trade, is the hottest commodity on the market right now. Bobby Slowick was right there with Ben Johnson last year on the hot commodities list. And right now, that's not so much the case. Have you formulated a prediction for the game on Sunday, Seth?
I have.
Okay.
Not happy about it.
Okay.
I like being liked, Sean.
Yeah, I know.
I like being liked for the most, you know, superficial of reasons. Mm-hmm. And one way to get people to like you is to say that you think a team's going to win, even though you don't actually think they're going to win. And I can't go there because I think there's some people that like me because I try like hell to be as honest as possible.
Yep.
So for those people, continue to like me as I pick the Lions to win this game 28-17.
28-17. Yeah. So you and I are on almost the exact same page.
Yeah, I'm just like you, though. I 100% hope that I'm proven wrong and an idiot on this.
Yeah.
But if I am proven an idiot on this, it's going to be because the Texans all of a sudden start operating differently than they have up to this point.
Yes.
This is a prove-it game for me. I know what they're capable of, and they have not displayed that yet. If they win this game, it's going to, unless it's by some weird flukish bad calls or something, it's going to be because they figured some things out, and I will be elated to have been wrong.
I'll take any type of win. I'm with you. I have 37-24 for those wondering. I have a little higher scoring game. You got another under, by the way, Seth. 31-17. Oh, 28-17. Sorry, 28-17 isn't. I believe the total's 49 on this game.
I still think at large, there's still an overestimation of the Texans' offense and an underestimation of their defense that is making the totals in these games higher than they should be.
Yeah,
so I'm gonna keep riding that.
There's a lot of I've seen texts and tweets from people like Seth on the under, man. I've been making a lot of money on Seth on the under, so that's good stuff. John Lopez, Reggie Atatula, they are in the loop. They are in studio. Let me ask you guys a question that we were kind of kicking around before.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a scenario with this game where the Texans lose, but we come in actually encouraged and happy on Monday?
Yeah.
They're 6-4, but they lost the game. and yet we're happy about that.
Absolutely, there's a scenario.
What would it be?
That's a scenario where they're actually doing the things that they've been telling us that they're going to do, which is fixing some of these things, picking up those stunts and twists on the offensive line and protecting CJ to where he has that time. Wide receivers actually getting some level of separation and doing that. Like somewhat akin to what we saw last night on Thursday Night Football, where you have two teams that are very clearly good, but one team is just the better, right? I think that people would be okay with acknowledging that the Detroit Lions are a better football team. I think that one of the issues that has been existing for the Texans is they're not living up to their potential, and that's the real frustration.
Yeah, that they could stand toe-to-toe with a team like that, I think, would satisfy a lot of people in this kind of short-term window we're in. I think would satisfy a lot.
I'll keep it very simple. I think the scenario is we get what we paid for, what we thought we were going to have offensively. You know, 38-35, 38-31, one of those things, and you're actually moving it. But the Lions are arguably the best team.
They're just really good.
Like, if this were the quote-unquote Super Bowl preview that we talked about in the preseason when we saw the schedule, they could have easily lost that game if they both play their best 38-35, 38-31, something like that.
You know? Yep, yep.
There was and you see this every year, and you don't know which team is going to be the team that does this, but teams that are just humming on all cylinders midway through the year. And usually the easy way to put it at the end of the season is, oh, they peaked too early. This would be this would be a Lions team that hopefully is peaking too early. And Jared Goff is coming off a 6-game stretch where he's at a higher passer rating over 6 games than any quarterback in the history of the NFL. So I have to feel that at some point that comes back down to earth a little bit, at least a little bit. Let's make this be the week that comes back down to earth a little bit, okay?
The Texans can win back a lot of hearts and minds on Sunday. It's a huge opportunity for this team to, especially if they're doing it without their, in my mind, their most valuable offensive and most valuable defensive player. Huge, huge opportunity. All right, you're listening to KLT and KLT HD2 on Odyssey Station. Seth, I will see you at 4:20 p.m. outside the stadium.
Ooh.
Texans countdown.
You knew that was coming.
Antibodies to you, my friend.
I wish, the 4:20 reference was coming, and yet does it really make... Doesn't carry the same cachet that it once did.
Now they've legalized it in so many places. So
that was a very good chance I'm under the influence the entire show during that day. So whatever. 4:20, whatever. So antibodies to you.
Thank you.
This show is brought to you by 5-Hour Energy. Being a fan is a hands-on job, which is why we're freeing up your hands for cheering, jeering, and everything in between. With 5-Hour Energy Fan E-Pack, you'll be fully equipped to hit the tailgate with all the energy you and your fellow diehards need for rooting on the home team. No matter what, just take a shot past the rest to your entire squad and keep the good times rolling. Now available on 5hourenergy.com with the purchase of Stan the Fan 5-Hour Energy. Shipped nationwide.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.